Part 3. In this part, you will hear two segments from a radio program. After each segment, you will hear six questions about it. Before each segment begins, you will have time to review the questions. You will hear each segment twice. Then you will hear the questions once. Choose the correct answer A, B, or C. Look at the questions, then listen to the first segment. Now you will hear the first segment.
In the past few years, tooth whitening has exploded as the cosmetic upgrade of choice. This year, Americans are expected to spend an astounding $1.7 billion on tooth whitening products and services. But how does tooth whitening work? Ethan Hawking reports.
Before we discuss tooth whitening into detail, let's become acquainted with the enemy, tooth stains. Our teeth are made up of an inner dentine layer and a hard outer protective enamel layer. Foods, cigarette smoke, or coffee slowly but steadily accumulate to form a pellicle film, another layer, over the enamel one. Scraping and chemical treatments applied by a dentist can knock out some of it, but if this layer sits on our teeth for years, the foreign material gets into the enamel. Because enamel is porous, staining agents can work their way down into the inner layer where they can't simply be scoured away. The deeper stains are harmless, but many find them unattractive. And it's the wish to conceal such blemishes which takes us to the dentist's chair for tooth whitening. Dentist Natalie Smith is here to tell us more.
Most tooth whiteners use one of two chemical agents, carbamide peroxide or hydrogen peroxide. In the mouth, carbamide peroxide breaks down into hydrogen peroxide and urea, with hydrogen peroxide being the active whitening ingredient. Hydrogen peroxide breaks down faster than carbamide peroxide, so it releases most of its whitening power within 30 to 60 minutes. Carbamide peroxide, on the other hand, releases about 50% of its whitening power in the first 2 hours and can remain active for up to 6 additional hours. The procedure starts with a dentist gently cleaning your teeth with pumice and putting a protective barrier on the gums. The chemical agent is then applied and rinsed off several times. To fast-track the bleaching chemical reaction, most in-office systems use a high-intensity light. The procedure can achieve about 4 to 6 shades of whitening after only one 40-minute treatment.
However, the cost of a dentist-supervised whitening treatment can sometimes be prohibitive, and it can take a longer time as you have to wait to be seen and evaluated, and then be treated. Could one use over-the-counter tooth whitening products?
Dentist-supervised systems have quite a few advantages over over-the-counter products. The main one is that only a dentist can help determine if tooth whitening should be performed and if it will be effective. The dentist will also decide the concentration of the whitening substances, treat patients who experience sensitivity to the whitening agents, and modify the procedure for those having difficulty in getting optimal results. Finally, the dentist can help the patient explore other cosmetic dental options, such as porcelain or resin veneers, tooth-colored fillings, or tooth shaping. It's through the dentist's contribution that the patient's cosmetic dental goals may be more easily attained.
Now you will hear the segment again.
In the past few years, tooth whitening has exploded as the cosmetic upgrade of choice. This year, Americans are expected to spend an astounding $1.7 billion on tooth whitening products and services. But how does tooth whitening work? Ethan Hawking reports.
Before we discuss tooth whitening into detail, let's become acquainted with the enemy, tooth stains. Our teeth are made up of an inner dentine layer and a hard outer protective enamel layer. Foods, cigarette smoke, or coffee slowly but steadily accumulate to form a pellicle film, another layer, over the enamel one. Scraping and chemical treatments applied by a dentist can knock out some of it, but if this layer sits on our teeth for years, the foreign material gets into the enamel. Because enamel is porous, staining agents can work their way down into the inner layer where they can't simply be scoured away. The deeper stains are harmless, but many find them unattractive. And it's the wish to conceal such blemishes which takes us to the dentist's chair for tooth whitening. Dentist Natalie Smith is here to tell us more.
Most tooth whiteners use one of two chemical agents, carbamide peroxide or hydrogen peroxide. In the mouth, carbamide peroxide breaks down into hydrogen peroxide and urea, with hydrogen peroxide being the active whitening ingredient. Hydrogen peroxide breaks down faster than carbamide peroxide, so it releases most of its whitening power within 30 to 60 minutes. Carbamide peroxide, on the other hand, releases about 50% of its whitening power in the first 2 hours and can remain active for up to 6 additional hours. The procedure starts with a dentist gently cleaning your teeth with pumice and putting a protective barrier on the gums. The chemical agent is then applied and rinsed off several times. To fast-track the bleaching chemical reaction, most in-office systems use a high-intensity light. The procedure can achieve about 4 to 6 shades of whitening after only one 40-minute treatment.
However, the cost of a dentist-supervised whitening treatment can sometimes be prohibitive, and it can take a longer time as you have to wait to be seen and evaluated, and then be treated. Could one use over-the-counter tooth whitening products?
Dentist-supervised systems have quite a few advantages over over-the-counter products. The main one is that only a dentist can help determine if tooth whitening should be performed and if it will be effective. The dentist will also decide the concentration of the whitening substances, treat patients who experience sensitivity to the whitening agents, and modify the procedure for those having difficulty in getting optimal results. Finally, the dentist can help the patient explore other cosmetic dental options, such as porcelain or resin veneers, tooth-colored fillings, or tooth shaping. It's through the dentist's contribution that the patient's cosmetic dental goals may be more easily attained.
Number 39. When are tooth stains extremely difficult to remove? Number 40. What is the advantage of carbamide peroxide over hydrogen peroxide? Number 41. Why is the high intensity light used during the tooth whitening process? Number 42. Which reason for using over-the-counter tooth whitening products is not mentioned? Number 43. What will a dentist do to help patients achieve the best possible results? Number 44. Which alternative cosmetic dental option is not mentioned? Look at the questions, then listen to the second segment. Now you will hear the second segment.
Batman wouldn't have worried about it, but scientists interested in bat conservation certainly do. As you know, bats, bears, and badgers tuck in tight for hibernation when winter comes. But something strange happened in Albany, New York in 2006, which alarmed bat conservationists. Anthony Davidson has the report.
In the winter of 2006, at a period which should have been a dormant one for bats, a wildlife biologist noticed that some bats were awake and flying outside their caves during the day when they were supposed to be deep in slumber. He also noticed a ring of white fungus around their noses as if they'd put their noses in flour. By early 2007, as many as 11,000 bats in New York caves had died. Scientists that examined the dead bats' bodies discovered that the bats were emaciated with very little fat left on and their wings were scarred. Conservationist Martha Wilson is here to tell us more.
That's right, Anthony. Scientists found similarities between this bizarre bat plague and colony collapse disorder, or CCD, a disease that mysteriously exterminated thousands of honeybees. The most striking one was that, like bats, bees suffering from CCD tended to fly outside during cold weather, never returning to their hives. The bat epidemic spread fast, and by spring 2008, evidence of bat deaths showed up in a number of states, slicing the bat population in some hibernation caves by 9/10. The disease was identified as white nose syndrome, or WNS, because the white fungus was primarily found on infected bats' noses, though it also appeared on their wings, ears, and tails. Scientists don't know how far or fast it could spread, but with a mortality rate between 80 and 100%, the syndrome could seriously threaten the future of bat species that have been affected. One of those, the Indiana myotis, especially concerns wildlife specialists because it's already federally classified as an endangered species. Although populations of the specific species reach 550,000, the animals tend to cluster together in large numbers, which means one infected cave could obliterate any chances of recovery.
Researchers haven't yet isolated a WNS pathogen or bacteria from the dead bats. The bat state makes them suspect that WNS is linked to some type of alteration in their metabolisms, but that hasn't been confirmed yet. The fact remains that bat populations are steadily dwindling and something must be done about it. Let's not forget that bats are actually more friend than foe to people. They rid us of mosquitoes and other insects, with farmers benefiting the most from the natural pest control bats perform.
So, listeners interested in helping bats survive, please consider making a donation to an animal conservation group. We all need to chip in when it comes to protecting a species.
Now you will hear the segment again.
Batman wouldn't have worried about it, but scientists interested in bat conservation certainly do. As you know, bats, bears, and badgers tuck in tight for hibernation when winter comes. But something strange happened in Albany, New York in 2006, which alarmed bat conservationists. Anthony Davidson has the report.
In the winter of 2006, at a period which should have been a dormant one for bats, a wildlife biologist noticed that some bats were awake and flying outside their caves during the day when they were supposed to be deep in slumber. He also noticed a ring of white fungus around their noses as if they'd put their noses in flour. By early 2007, as many as 11,000 bats in New York caves had died. Scientists that examined the dead bats' bodies discovered that the bats were emaciated with very little fat left on and their wings were scarred. Conservationist Martha Wilson is here to tell us more.
That's right, Anthony. Scientists found similarities between this bizarre bat plague and colony collapse disorder, or CCD, a disease that mysteriously exterminated thousands of honeybees. The most striking one was that, like bats, bees suffering from CCD tended to fly outside during cold weather, never returning to their hives. The bat epidemic spread fast, and by spring 2008, evidence of bat deaths showed up in a number of states, slicing the bat population in some hibernation caves by 9/10. The disease was identified as white nose syndrome, or WNS, because the white fungus was primarily found on infected bats' noses, though it also appeared on their wings, ears, and tails. Scientists don't know how far or fast it could spread, but with a mortality rate between 80 and 100%, the syndrome could seriously threaten the future of bat species that have been affected. One of those, the Indiana myotis, especially concerns wildlife specialists because it's already federally classified as an endangered species. Although populations of the specific species reach 550,000, the animals tend to cluster together in large numbers, which means one infected cave could obliterate any chances of recovery.
Researchers haven't yet isolated a WNS pathogen or bacteria from the dead bats. The bat state makes them suspect that WNS is linked to some type of alteration in their metabolisms, but that hasn't been confirmed yet. The fact remains that bat populations are steadily dwindling and something must be done about it. Let's not forget that bats are actually more friend than foe to people. They rid us of mosquitoes and other insects, with farmers benefiting the most from the natural pest control bats perform.
So, listeners interested in helping bats survive, please consider making a donation to an animal conservation group. We all need to chip in when it comes to protecting a species.
Number 45. What is the report mainly about? Number 46. What was wrong with the dead bats' bodies? Number 47. What did the sick bats and honeybees infected with CCD share? Number 48. Why are scientists particularly worried about the Indiana myotis species? Number 49. How much do scientists already know about the white nose syndrome? Number 50. Why are farmers mentioned? End of the listening test.